And good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. Of course, the late Patty Fink isn't here yet. She will be joining us in a few minutes. She's taking a new route, so she will be late.
So that's why she's late.
Today only.
Okay.
David, taking a new route, does that mean she was someplace else and coming
here? I don't know.
Because that's what her Facebook said.
I don't know.
Clint sold you out.
Uh-huh. Well, Patty will be with us in a minute. Our guest today is Leslea Newman. She is the author of a new book entitled October Morning. What
yes.
is the exact title? October Morning, A Song for Matthew Shepard. Now, this book, I was going to read a piece of it, and I talked to Leslea before the show. I can't
okay.
because I break down every time I do. But the other thing that Leslea is known for is her book, Heather Has Two Mommies. And, of course, that's one of the most banned books because she is such a threat. Leslea, welcome.
Go.
There you are. Welcome to the show. Heather Has Two Mommies, one of my favorite books. I give it to all new parents that I know who need to read it to their kids.
And he does, and I have one because I had a new kid 4 years ago.
Not old enough.
Tell us the story of Heather. How did that come about?
Well, this is a story that has become an urban lesbian legend,
uh-huh.
but it happens to be true. I was walking down the street in Northampton, Massachusetts, and a woman stopped me, and she said, I don't have a book I can read to my daughter that shows a family like ours. Somebody should write one. And she gave me that, you know, that lesbian look that says, you will do as I say.
Uh-huh.
So I know that look.
So I wrote the book, and I couldn't find a publisher, so a friend and I published it ourselves, funded by $410 donations. And then the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, you invented crowdsourcing.
I did. This was before the internet. This was by, like, sitting in my living room, my friend and I, licking envelopes, putting stamps on, and sending them out.
Tell me about writing, Heather, because you had nothing to base it on, really. And it really is subversive. Heather goes to a park on a picnic. You know, she does things like that with her moms. How did you come up with these horrible things for a kid to do?
Well, yeah, I know. I basically took out armloads of picture books from the library to read and get used to the form and then look around and see all the families, two-mom families around me, and just kind of put the story together.
So you went on lesbian picnics then specifically that were so different than what straight people do with their kids, right?
Well, the big difference is the incredible amount of hummus.
Ah.
Can't be a lesbian picnic without hummus.
Exactly.
Now, Laurent, before the show, you were saying just today, or just this week.
Just this week, I have
a mother.
My daughter has asked, that she just asked if she come out of a woman's belly. And I said yes. And that's where the conversation started and stopped. But I know it's coming. She's going to ask who her mother is one day. She knows very much about this book. We have read it many times. But I just think it's great because at least she has something to see that all families aren't the exact same as far as the way they look anyway.
Right, right. Well, you know, I do also have a two-dad book. You know that?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yes, you do.
Daddy Papa, and me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then also, I do have an adoption book. So it's not the same in a way, but it's about two lesbians who adopt a little girl from Guatemala, and they do very briefly discuss her birth mother in that book.
Hmm.
Oh, okay.
What's the name of that one?
Felicia's Favorite Story.
Okay, we'll look for it for Laurent.
Yeah.
But Laurent, you also said that a mom came up to you this week.
Yeah, a mom at school came up to me this week and said, we had a lesson today. And, of course, I had this look on my face like, what are you talking about? Her daughter, who's Gabrielle's classmate, said that she brought up the fact that Gabrielle had two daddies. And I guess she was a little sad about it because she said, you know, well, I want two daddies because she doesn't have a dad at all.
Okay, let me
rephrase that. She does have a dad. Of course she has a father, but he's not in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
She has
mm-hmm.
a single mom, and her mom just had to explain to her that, yes, her dad still loved her, but Gabrielle was just lucky. She just happened to have two daddies. So I just thought that was an interesting twist to it. Well, this little
yeah,
girl
I did
was,
once have a little boy say to me, "How come I only have one mom? I wish I had two."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So kids really, they don't have this preconceived notion that, you know, a mom and a dad is the best family and everything else is second
no.
rate. I mean, they that their
they
notion
not.
Is, this is the person or these are the people who love me and take care of me, so this is my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
end of story, until somebody says something else to them.
Yeah, kids are just completely open. They don't have these preconceived notions. A friend of mine here is a rabbi, and his wife is a rabbi. And one of their kids, when he was young, had a friend who had two dads. So they're talking and playing one day, and they were about 6 years old. And one of the rabbi's kid looked at the other one and said, "How come you have two daddies?" And the rabbi was thinking, "Oh my God, what are we going to do? I'm going to have to go through this." But the other kid looked at him and he said, "I don't know. Why do you have two rabbis?"
Well, you know, I made me as soon as you said that, I thought Heather has two rabbis.
Yeah.
It should be my next book.
Yeah, it should be.
And not only that, but you've redeemed the name Heather from its, you know, erstwhile.
I know.
Reputation.
Well, sometimes I think, you know, it's kind of like Lolita. Like nobody's going to, you know, use that name anymore.
I don't know. I think a bunch of lesbian moms would name their kid Heather.
Perhaps.
Absolutely, uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, can you talk, I don't know, is this the first, I had ever heard of a children's book for a same-sex household. Is it the first one?
As far as I know, it's the first one that portrayed a happy family. There was a book, I can't remember, or a story, actually. I can't remember the exact title. It was something like When Jenny Went Away or something like that. And it was a short story published in Ms. Magazine about a girl who had two moms and one mom left the family.
No.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, at least we're not lesbian vampire serial killers.
No. But, you know what the heck? You know, now we have gay marriage, we're going to have gay divorce, right? That's just the way it
is.
Right. But that's okay after we've had a whole body of work published, but not as the first one.
Yeah,
it was the first
one. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, the first one needs to be something like Heather Has Two Mommies because, mm-hmm. you know, it shows a normal, healthy family.
Right.
And shortly after this was Daddy's Roommate.
Daddy's Roommate. Yeah, they came out at about the same time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a badge of honor, I think, in our community to have protesters, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we do an event and there aren't any, we're kind of disappointed. damn, you know. So I think it's really special that the Wichita Falls, you know, their library was having your book on the shelves.
That was a big to-do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And the pastor there has moved now to Dallas, of course. He's at First Baptist Dallas, who was leading that effort. And
I didn't realize that was him.
That was him.
Oh.
So have you heard from him? Like, what kind of trouble is he causing?
He puts on his marquee outside the church, homosexuality is a sin. And
mm-hmm. Gay is not okay.
Gay is not okay.
That kind of nonsense.
It's really, he's pretty virile about all of it. And virulent, I should say. No, I shouldn't say he's virile.
Vile.
There we go.
Yeah.
But I would think that's sort of a badge of honor. If you can draw them, the worst of them.
This is a tiny book that, as you said, was, you know, crowdsourced. Mm-hmm. And I never thought anything would happen. I just thought, I hope I sell enough, you know, to make it worthwhile. Because I did put in a little of my own money.
Sure.
And, you know, I had no idea what would happen and that, you know, it's still in print all these years later.
So you didn't expect the fallout?
No.
Well, for those who don't know, can you kind of tell us?
Nobody was interested in publishing it, so I didn't think anyone was going to really care.
Oh.
Right. I mean, the other thing about books is there are millions of them. And for one book to have made that kind of an impact is amazing. It's not amazing that the book caught on in our community. I mean, there just was nothing else there. But it's amazing that it bothered so many other people. And, you know, and from our traditions, you don't like something that somebody else has written, don't buy the book, don't read it.
Right.
Well,
people went a lot further than that, of course.
Well, of course.
I mean, it's the only children's book that has ever been read on the Senate floor.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Wow.
That
is a badge.
It's part of the congressional record.
What was the context that they were reading?
Oh, I can't quite remember now, but, you know, obviously somebody was protesting it and thinking, you know, I'm sure it had something to do with the fact that it was in libraries which were publicly funded, you know, that kind of thing.
That kind of nonsense, yeah.
Well, this is, you know, 20 years ago was the time and place of, you know, what's her name, Murphy Brown.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And a fictional character being a single mom and the, you know, national conversation.
Now, your book actually was getting stolen from libraries.
It was getting stolen. It was getting returned with its pages glued shut. It was left in a library bathroom, defecated upon. I mean, you know, poor little Heather.
Mm-hmm. Poor Heather. But poor people who are doing this, that's really sick.
That is sick.
All of it. But what your publisher did, because you self-published, and then a year later, Allison Press picked the book up.
I have to correct you. I didn't self-publish. I co-published with a friend of mine.
Okay.
So, I want to make sure that she gets credit where credit is due.
Sure.
Her name is Sivia Gover, and she had a desktop publishing business called In Other Words. And so she and I put the book out together.
Got it. Okay. But a traditional publisher, a gay press, Allison Press, picked the book up about a year later. How did that come about?
Basically, Sasha Allison walked into New Words Bookshop, which is in Cambridge, Mass., and he saw the book, so he called me up and said, introduced himself and told me he was doing Daddy's Roommate and maybe we should join forces. And so I talked to my friend, and we were like, we're done with publishing, so, why don't you just take over? And he was very happy to do that.
Ah, okay. And then during this period where all these books were getting stolen and, torn up and ruined, he offered to the first 500 librarians a free copy.
Yes, and he fulfilled that.
But the number of librarians who called in and said, yes, I need a replacement copy, I mean, he fulfilled it like in an hour or something ridiculously quick.
Ridiculous, yeah. I mean, people were really going crazy. I mean, and they don't seem to realize that the public library is for everyone, including gay people. We are part of the public. It's not just for some people or just for the people that you happen to agree with.
So you don't want to burn books by right-wing authors, huh?
No.
Okay.
Well, I think a lot of people who would do something to this book actually believe that there are no gay people in their community.
Right.
Well, or they believe that the danger of this book is, Laurent, I gave you that book, you read it to Gabrielle, and now you got a lesbian 4-year-old on your hands.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So,
what I always point out to people is that when I was a child, I was an avid reader, and I must have read, I don't know, how many thousands of books that portrayed heterosexual people. And, none of them turned me into a heterosexual.
Right.
Right.
And I was wondering if
you don't get that logic.
I know.
No.
If you could talk a little
bit
about
one way.
The importance of writing a book just for something that kids don't see that looks like their family.
Right. Well, the reason when this woman stopped me on the street and I didn't just brush off her request is because I thought about when I was growing up in the 1950s, I never read a book that showed a Jewish family. I read Dick and Jane. I read books, every December we were taught, we read storybooks about Santa Claus, and then the spring we read books about the Easter Bunny. And I'm like, where's the book about the little girl with frizzy hair eating matzo ball soup with her bubby on Shabbos, I need that book. So, as a child, I couldn't really articulate that. But as an adult, I could really understand how comforting it would be for a child to see a family like his or hers in a book. So that's why I wrote the book.
And I think that's really important. I attended a women's event here in Dallas the day after Election Day last fall. And Gina Davis was the speaker and talked about her work in looking at the media to see images of girls and women and how meager and how stereotyped those images still are and few they are.
I mean, even the impact of Gina Davis with a bow and arrow, Be Still My Heart.
I know.
That image is just, a strong woman.
Mm-hmm.
Archer. I mean, when do you see that? Never.
Right. Oh, exactly. And she was writing books for her daughter because she wanted her daughter to see different things than she was getting in the media and in society. But she did this correlation between what little girls see as their possibilities in life and just portrayed in the media and throughout society. And it's really sad, but it does have an impact.
It does.
And so I think books like this are so important because if you don't see yourself in what you're reading and the world around you. You don't see yourself in the world around you.
Exactly.
You know, and Leslie, you were saying that you just didn't see any Jewish portrayals in the media, and most people think right away, yeah, but the studios were all, you know, founded by Jews, and there's so many of us Jews around there. But if you think about it, what was a great composer like Irving Berlin writing?
Christmas
White
songs.
Christmas and Easter right. Parade.
Right.
Right.
Right, so you wanted the Christmas tree.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, Barbara Streisand has a Christmas album.
Uh-huh, exactly. Well, one of the best-selling, her and Neil Diamond, two of the best-selling Christmas albums of all time.
On the other hand, Connie Francis has the greatest Jewish hits, which I love.
There we go. Uh-huh, uh-huh. A little bit of redemption.
Uh-huh. Do we need to take a, we need to take a break in just a minute. I wanted to ask you one quick question. You're from Brooklyn.
I am.
You had a bubby, and you're saying, you know, you had matzo balls. Okay, you're from Brooklyn. I'm from Yankees, so I'm going to talk to you like this.
Okay.
Where did that accent mark on your name come from? People in Brooklyn don't have accent marks.
That's true. They have accents, but not accent marks.
Exactly.
See, when I was growing up, I was put in the boys' gym class in high school, which was mortifying, and I got a draft card. And so I decided to change my name. I was going to change it to Leah, but I didn't really like that. And I always wanted to be famous, so I thought I'd come up with a unique name, Leslea. And nobody was saying it that way, so I put the accent on the E, and it's an accent of stress.
Got it.
Gotcha.
Okay, so it wasn't your bubby who gave it to you?
No.
Okay. Does she like it?
She never called me anything but darling or mamalo or bubala.
Okay. Good. We're talking to Leslea Newman. Her new book is October Morning, which we're going to talk about right after the break. October Morning, a song from Matthew Shepard. We've been talking about Heather as Two Mommies, which is a children's book classic. And she's one of the most dangerous authors in the world, one of the most banned authors in the world. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
So much pain. We don't know how to be but angry.
Statistics say 1.5 million teenagers experience dating abuse every year.
Only 33% report it.
Let's break the cycle.
Love is not abuse.
If you or someone you know is experiencing teen dating abuse, get help now.
For immediate, confidential assistance, call 866-331-9474 or log on to loveisrespect.org.
You can also text LOVEIS to 77054.
To learn more about what abuse is and the resources available to you, visit loveisnotabuse.com.
You don't have to be afraid.
Call 866-331-9474.
Store the number in your phone for future use.
866-331-9474.
Know how to get help for yourself or someone you know.
We now have fewer than 500 copies left. That's right, fewer than 500 copies left of the KNON Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 Blues CD. Texas Blues Radio features great blues from Tutu Jones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Colley, Johnny Red and the Roosters, the Chris Watson Band, the Two Tones, Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone and Charlie Love, Dave Millsap, Sirloin and the Ass Kicking Machine, Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, and JJ and the Detonators. Get your copy now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, and in Dallas at Bill's Records. Destined to be a Dallas Blues collectible, a very limited amount of vinyl copies can be found at Forever Young Records, the sponsor of this great blues project. CD downloads are now only $11 at cdbaby.com. Whether you get it as a download, on vinyl, or on CD, all the proceeds benefit KNON. More information at KNON.org.
This is William, your videographer for the KNON talk shows. You can watch Lambda Weekly by going to the KNON.org website. Click on Schedules to the left side of your screen. Choose Lambda Weekly's page. Scroll to the bottom of that page. Then choose your favorite show to watch or download. This show will be ready for viewing by lunchtime Tuesday. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Ecta from Utah, Dallas, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and with Lauren Landis. And our guest today is Leslea Newman, and her new book is October Morning, A Song for Matthew Shepard. I took out the book again this morning and I started reading the first poem. I was in tears, so I'm not going to even begin to try to read any of this, but Leslea said she would read a couple of the poems. Before we even get to what the book is, what was your connection to the story? You had an intimate connection to the Matthew Shepard story.
Right. So in the spring of 1998, I was invited to the University of Wyoming to be the keynote speaker for their Gay Awareness Week. And then on the weekend between the time Matthew was attacked and the time he died, I got a phone call telling me what had happened, and they asked me if I still wanted to come, and I said, of course. So I actually arrived on campus on Monday, October 12th, which is the day he died, to give a talk actually called Heather's Mommy Speaks Out, Homophobia, Censorship, and Family Values, to kick off their Gay Awareness Week. So needless to say, when I arrived, I found a devastated campus, town, community. I met his friends. I met his teachers. I gave my talk. It was a very emotional time.
Oh, I can imagine.
And October 11th was National Coming Out Day.
Exactly.
The day before.
Yeah. And I saw written that you said that in the front row there was one empty seat.
Right. The front row was filled with the students from the LGBT Association, and there was one empty seat, and I just kept looking at it and thinking, you know, Matt Shepard should have been sitting there.
Mm.
He was part of the LGBT Association that had planned my visit, so I definitely would have met him.
Oh, sure. How long did it take you to write this book?
Well, I was the Poet Laureate of Northampton, Massachusetts from 2008 to 2010. And in 2009, I came up with a project called 30 Poems in 30 Days. So I got about 75 poets to write a poem a day during the month of November. And people to pledge monetary amounts per poem, and we raised about $13,000 for a local literacy organization.
Oh, great. That's
and fantastic.
And so this book is the byproduct of that project.
Ah, okay.
And I started it right after I saw the Laramie Project Part 2, the epilogue, which was performed simultaneously in 150 cities around the country on the 11th anniversary of Matthew Shepard's murder.
Huh. Did these poems just flow? And let's just explain what the book is. The book is a series of poems written from the viewpoint of each and every thing and person that had anything to do with the death. So the first one is called The Fence.
Can I read it?
You want to read it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, because I can't. I really can't. It gets me that much still.
Out and alone on the endless prairie, endless empty prairie, the moon bathes me, the star bless me, the sun warms me, the wind soothes me. Still, 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 I wonder, will I always be out there exposed and alone? Will I ever know why I was put on this earth? Will somebody someday stumble upon me? Will anyone remember after I'm gone?
Wow, that was beautiful reading.
That was really a lovely poem, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all of these are.
Yeah, and, you know, it begins with the fence, because when you think of the Matthew Shepard murder, you think of this kid being hung on this fence.
Right.
I mean, it's
right.
Just devastating. What was it, do you think, about that murder? I remember I was driving home from work, and I heard about the attack. He was still alive. And I was instantly in tears listening to that. And we had several hate crimes here in Texas, and I was on the board of the Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby, and our lobbyist had followed all of the trials through the 90s and worked on hate crime legislation for 10 years that we didn't get until George Bush was out of office. And it passed almost immediately after his leaving office here. But because the new governor, I can't think of what his name is, but the new...
Goodhair.
Whatever.
Governor Goodhair.
He was told at the time, he had no power yet, and he was told at the time, it's time, sign this. But I remember her following each of these, but this particular murder, there was just something about it that touched everybody.
Everybody.
Why was that?
Well, I think there were there was a lot of things going on. First of all, Wyoming has such a mystique to it. You don't really ever hear about Wyoming. It's one of the most least populated states in the country.
And in fact, a friend of mine told me who's from Wyoming said that their biggest export is people.
Yeah. So, you know, the Wild West mystique, all of that. You had this, you know, student who was very good-looking, very small in stature. And then you had these two, you know, thugs, for lack of a better word. You had a class thing going on. You know, Matthew Shepard was from a family of means, and his murderers were high school dropouts who, you know, had to fill their pockets to get enough nickels, dimes, and quarters together for a pitcher of beer. Mm. And then the brutality, of course, the fact that they beat him mercilessly and left him there to die, mm-hmm. and that he was out there for 18 hours, found accidentally, and then, you know, there was all this tension. Would his parents get there in time? Would he make it? Would he... his body be able to sustain these injuries? So for those five, I mean, I think if he had died instantly, I mean, this is horrible to say, but there wouldn't have been the drama. Five days that there were vigils. Ellen DeGeneres spoke on the steps of the Capitol. President Clinton called the family. You know, all kinds of things were going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, most riveting for me was that the cyclist who was going by thought it was a scarecrow.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And
right.
That was just, you know, just daunting to me. Yeah.
Right. And then, of course, the homecoming parade in Colorado had that horrible float with the scarecrow, you know, with the words "I'm gay" painted on it. So just there were kind of more and more things added to the story that made it even more and more disturbing.
And another thing, I find it interesting, despite the Laramie Project and everything else, I found your description of what was going on in Laramie at the time to be interesting. Now, in Dallas, we were known for years as the city of hate because we were the city that killed Kennedy.
Right.
And as if the whole city did it. I think Laramie kind of got that, oh, well, yeah, it happened in Laramie, Wyoming. Probably most people there were, you know, they didn't care. But that's not true. People there were horrified by it.
People were horrified, and it was, you know, it was so upsetting to the community because the two murderers were very well known. You know, people would come, you know, I went to high school with him. I went to elementary school with him. I knew him. And, you know, they couldn't believe that two kids who had grown up in their town could do something like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but that image really didn't get out. I guess it did in the Laramie Project, but it didn't resonate with me until I heard your description of what was going on there. Would you, Leslie, would you like to read another poem?
Sure. Let's see. I will read another poem from The Fence, and this is The Fence That Night.
Mm-hmm.
I held him all night long. He was heavy as a broken heart. Tears fell from his unblinking eyes. He was dead weight, yet he kept breathing. He was heavy as a broken heart. His own heart wouldn't stop beating. He was dead weight, yet he kept breathing. His face streaked with moonlight and blood. His own heart wouldn't stop beating. The cold wind wouldn't stop blowing. His face streaked with moonlight and blood. I tightened my grip and held on. The cold wind wouldn't stop blowing. We were out on the prairie alone. I tightened my grip and held on. I saw what was done to this child. We were out on the prairie alone. Their truck was the last thing he saw. I saw what was done to this child. I cradled him just like a mother. Their truck was the last thing he saw. Tears fell from his unblinking eyes. I cradled him just like a mother. I held him all night long.
Mm. That's beautiful.
It really is.
You describe the book as a novel in verse. And I think that's an interesting description.
Well, actually, that's how my publisher describes it. I don't really think of it as a novel. I think of it as a cycle of poems, or even one long poem that tells a story.
Mm. And it is one long poem in that they're all about the same thing.
Right. And I suppose novel is accurate in a way because, you know, I am making up people like a student, a mother, a father, and also putting words in actual people's mouths because you know, the players. There are some epigraphs which are actual quotes that were said by actual people, but then the poem that was inspired by that quote, the body of the poem, are my words.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what's so special about this book. Even if you don't know the details of the story, you can read this. I'm just flipping through it, and you can pretty much gather what happened. And I think you've done an amazing job here, putting this in the form of poem. It still kind of is like a novel. I mean, this is really, really good.
This book has won a number of awards already. The first one it won was the ALA's Stonewall Award.
It won a Stonewall Honor, which is a huge thing, and I'm quite excited and happy about that. It also is, let's see, a Massachusetts Book Award Must Read book. Mm-hmm. I just found out it's shortlisted for the New York State Reading Association Charlotte Book Award, which is really thrilling. It was selected by Spalding University as their campus book in common, which means the whole campus will read the book.
Ooh.
It got a Nerdy Book Club Poetry Award, which I was very happy about.
I like
about.
That.
you know, on and on and on. A American Library Association Roundtable Rainbow Book, International Reading Association Young Children's Choices Book. So, yeah, I'm thrilled about that. I really am. Because, you know, really the main reason I wanted to write this book was because 15 years has gone by, which is amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, high school students don't know who Matthew Shepard was. Many college students don't know who Matthew Shepard was. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that his story was not forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Have you met, I'm sure you've met, Judy Shepard?
Oh, yes. This past winter, Judy Shepard came to Brooklyn, New York, our hometown,
mm-hmm.
To see the Tectonic Theater Company perform the Laramie Project, both parts, and she had never sat through it before.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So, and she and Moises Kaufman did a symposium, and then the show was performed. I went to dinner with her with a bunch of people, and, you know, I wrote to her when the first draft of the book was done to tell her what I was doing and to make sure that it was okay.
Oh, sure. That's not something that you want to just spring on somebody.
No.
Of course not.
No.
Yeah. Was it pretty difficult for her to sit through the play?
You know, because I was a keynote speaker that year, and I had written a essay called Imagine on the plane ride home in 1998, and I published it in about 20 gay newspapers around the country. I think actually the Texas Triangle was one of them.
Uh-huh.
And so I had sent that to her. And that revised version of that essay is the afterword of the book. So I sent her that essay again to remind her of who I was and, you know, told her what I was doing. And then got connected with the foundation, and now I am actually an official member of the Matthew Shepard Foundation Speakers Bureau.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, so they send me around, you know, to give talks, to read from the book, to talk about Matthew Shepard.
Yeah.
I've met her on a number of occasions, and one of the things that we had in common is that at the time that he was in university in Wyoming, his family was living in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I was an oil brat as well, but I was in Libya. And so Matthew had gone to high school in Switzerland, as did I. And so on occasions when I've had an opportunity to speak with her in person, we kind of talk about that, and I know which school he went to and, you know, some things. So it's it was interesting sharing that, because it is sort of a different way of living with your parents halfway around the world.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And it took them, you know, many, many hours to get here, you know, after he was attacked, and then they found him, and then they called them, and then they couldn't leave Saudi Arabia for about 19 hours, and then it took them 19 more hours to get there.
Mm. Right.
So, you know, it was really a saga.
Right.
It's not a trivial travel arrangement to make.
No.
Exactly.
Well, we're talking to Leslea Newman. She is the author of Heather Has Two Mommies, and her new book is October Morning, the book about Matthew Shepard. You've actually written about 60 books.
I have.
Okay, so we're going to run out of time. I'm not going to ask you what's your favorite book, because that's so hard. Your favorite one, I'm sure, is the latest one that you've written.
Or the one not yet written.
The one that is just an idea, although that might be the most frustrating one sometimes.
Definitely.
But your newest children's book is a book called A Kiss on the Kepi.
A Kiss on the Kepi.
I love that. And the two of them are looking at me. They don't know what I'm talking about.
What's a
kepi? Yeah, it's a kepi.
It's not dirty. a kepi is an affectionate term for head. It's Yiddish. It comes from the Yiddish or German kop, which means head. So it's just a very sweet story about a little boy who gets kisses all day long from his parents, his grandparents, and even his dog, Dreidel.
His dog, Dreidel.
His dog, Dreidel. Yeah. I love that.
Is it? It's already out?
It's already out.
Okay, yeah. That is.
I've got to go get that for my daughter. Sounds really cute.
Yeah.
But I would like to mention my book, Donovan's Big Day.
Yes,
I have that.
One I love that one. Do you know?
Yes, I have that.
I got a review copy of that, and after I reviewed it, I brought it into you.
You did. Yeah, that's a really good one.
I love that one.
So it's a book about a little boy named Donovan who has a very big day ahead of him, a very big job to do. His two moms are getting married.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm fully expecting the Supreme Court to do the right thing and for Donovan's big day to be like number one on the New York Times bestselling list.
That would be great.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be great.
Do you get a pickup in sales every time a state enacts same-sex marriage?
You know, I'm not really sure. That would be a good thing for me to try and, you know, track down, because it is, you know, if I do say so myself, the perfect gift to give a same-sex couple on their wedding day.
Oh,
You need to translate it into French.
Was it sweet?
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Marriage equality in France this week.
Get it published in France.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Spanish. Marriage equality in Uruguay this month.
Three
countries in the past 3 weeks?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I know. You know, I give this talk, Heather's Mommy Speaks Out, and I actually changed the title to Heather's Mommy Gets Married, and I have to, like, update, you know, hourly the talk. Which is great.
It's a great problem to have.
And Rhode Island is on its way.
They're on the verge. They have one more hurdle to get through, and then...
Right, and they're saying that it's just a formality. Yeah, that, you know, exactly.
And then Lincoln Chafee, of course, who was a big ally of ours when he was in the Senate, and now is governor of...
He said he'd sign it. But the other one that's a little bit surprising is Delaware. They're on the verge.
Right. So, you know, the East Coast is a happening place.
Mm-hmm.
Those tiny little states in New England are...
But what's amazing,
pioneers.
What's amazing is that a bill here in Texas to repeal our Haight Amendment got a hearing.
Uh-huh.
So... If even in Texas, a House committee is reviewing a repeal of our anti-marriage amendment, things are moving.
Things are moving.
They are moving in the right direction. We need to take a break. We're talking to Leslie Ann Newman. Her newest book is A Kiss on the Kepi. And where that Kepi, by the way, is short for Keppela. Which comes from Kopf in German.
Right.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. We'll be back with more with Leslie Newman after this.
Ladies and gentlemen, AM Law Group presents a blues legend in a historic venue. This is Greg Smith here to tell you about Bobby Rush at the Sons of Herman Hall on Saturday, April the 27th. That's right, I'll be hosting a legend live and up close in this intimate venue. Get your tickets now and don't miss out and see a complete Bobby Rush show. Joining Bobby Rush will be Little Jimmy and his feedback band. Fort Worth party people will have a free Bobby Rush party bus leaving from the Silver Eagle bus station. More information is at KNON.org. And if the Grammy-nominated Bobby Rush wasn't enough, we'll have a free dinner from Daddy Jack's Fort Worth and South Lake location. Get your tickets now at KNON.org. Bills Records, Forever Young Records, and Comp Cleaners in Fort Worth. This is a KNON Blues benefit, Bobby Rush and Little Jimmy and his feedback band. April the 27th at the Sons of Herman Hall, 3414 Am Street in Dallas. Presented by AM Law Group and sponsored in part by Top Dollar Tax Service, Silver Eagle Bus Charter, and Daddy Jack's.
Project 143 gives orphans the opportunity to leave their orphanage for the summer and visit an American host family. Photos and bios are now available online. For more information or to be an orphan's family this summer, Project 143 at 720-263-7143 or project143.com. Because 143 million orphans worldwide need help. Consider hosting an orphan this summer with Project 143.
This is Raphael McDonald from Resource Center Dallas. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. And our guest is Leslie Ann Newman, the author of Heather Has Two Mommies and 60 other books. Laurent.
Well, okay, I have the 20th anniversary edition of Heather Has Two Mommies. Uh-huh. It's actually coming up on the 25th anniversary, right? She's there.
Heather is temporarily out of print.
It's out of print.
But it's coming back. And it's going to be newly illustrated.
It so can't be out of print. I have a pregnant friend.
You, my darling, I will send you a copy.
Okay. Have you spoken with any of the little kids that were around when in the first couple of years when this book first came out? And have you spoken with that since they've grown
well,
up?
Well, yes. In fact, I have a very interesting story. The book is dedicated to two they're not little girls anymore, Sarah and Miranda. And Sarah went off to college and took a children's literature class, and the professor, you know, brought up Heather Has Two Mommies, etc. And Sarah was like, you know, that book's dedicated to me. And the teacher was like, oh, yeah, right. I have to write her a note to prove it.
I hope her teacher was appropriately impressed.
Yes, very impressed. I'm sure she got an A in the class.
Oh, how funny.
I love that. Yes. Oh, yeah, right.
But yes, you know, I speak very often at colleges and universities, and I will now have students come up to me. You know, they're 18, 19, 20 years old, and they'll say, oh, that was my favorite book when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is just really cool.
You know, it's not just because it's a first of its kind. It's just a sweet book.
It's a cute book, absolutely. Yeah.
And this is long before Heather got a smartphone.
Yeah.
That might be a
sequel.
I mean,
now Heather got her period. She'll be going through menopause anyway.
That's right.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. You know, one thing, I want to change gears a little bit here. While the late Patty Fink is being so inappropriate.
Hey, I had to say something.
I'm laughing because I will get to that point.
Yes, you will.
Where I'll have to talk to my daughter about that. I'm not looking forward to it. But anyway.
And you're going to need a book about it.
And I'm going to need a book about it. So get on that, Leslie.
Okay. I'm on it.
A number of years ago, one of your introduction into writing was you became the apprentice to Allen Ginsberg.
That is true.
Wow.
You know, he's one of those people who's always fascinated me, I guess because I identified, you know, gay, Jewish, New York, all that kind of stuff. But he's somebody that I never really got a grasp of what was this man really like. I remember studying Howell in a literature class in college, but I never really felt like I knew him. And Kaddish was his other great piece. What was he like?
Well, you know, it's funny because when you think of him, you think of all those great pieces of literature. But when you were with him, he was just kind of like your nebbishy Uncle Irving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like his pants were always, you know, drooping, and he was always trying to feed you. And he was just a really sweet old Jewish guy who, you know, liked other guys, but as we know. But, you know, he's very generous. I would help him answer his mail, and he would pay the same amount of attention to mail that was from a quote-unquote important person, you know, like a big editor or a big politician, and someone who might be seen as less important, like, you know, a gay kid from Kansas who didn't know who else to write to. You know, this is pre-internet, mm-hmm. and he did get letters like that.
I'm sure he got a lot of them.
He answered them all very, very carefully. He helped me get my first book published, which was a very small poetry collection called Just Looking for My Shoes. He was very careful about his writing. He rewrote with great pains and with great detail, and he was a wonderful teacher.
Huh. I find that fascinating because he just seems like one of those people who's this figure. And
he's such an icon.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
That's what a thrill to be able to have known him personally and worked
right.
with him.
Well, you know, I mean, I was young. I was in my mid-20s, and I went to the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics, which is part of Naropa Institute, which actually is now Naropa University, and there was no campus, so we would just meet in our teacher's home.
Huh.
So, you know, I would be, you know, knock on Alan's door, come in, and Peter Orlovsky would be there cooking soup, you know, in his tiny little red satin running shorts. They would be playing, you know, Ma Rainey or Billie Holiday on their little stereo, and it was very Hamish.
Well, you know, and one of the things that I love about him, I guess, is that these young kids these days, they just have this idea that there were no gay people before Stonewall.
Right.
And there very much were. And Allen Ginsberg was one of those people who in the 50s was out and open and didn't care.
Right, right. I mean, and his relationship with Peter Orlovsky is legendary.
Mm-hmm.
you know, which lasted from the day they met to the end of Alan's life.
Right. Yeah, when I was in college, and you and I are about the same age, so when I was in college, my role models were professors of mine who were openly gay, served in World War II, you know, had relationships. And to me, that was just a very normal thing. People today don't think about that. It's like, oh, well, you know, gay didn't come around until...
Right, we just boof. We just
appeared.
Yep.
No, gays didn't appear until Ellen.
Right.
I think
right.
A lot of people do think that. A lot of young people.
A lot of people do think that. Yeah, you're right.
I mean, our guest host last week is a young man who's in high school writing a story about he needed some LGBT history in Dallas, and boom, it's us. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, there's so many
people. History. Right.
So many people before us, you know. We're standing on the shoulders of legends.
Every generation thinks they are the first. They have invented, you know, whatever, being gay or even sexuality, because, you know, you can't imagine people over the age of 30 being sexual. Mm-hmm. But the fabulous poet Gwendolyn Brooks, an African-American poet, came to give a reading at Smith College towards the end of her life. I think she was in her late 80s, and she read this incredibly sexy poem, this gorgeous poem. And then, she, you know, afterwards she just kind of looked at the audience and she said, "You didn't invent it, you know." And it was just a great moment.
That's a great line.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, even you know, going back to Heather Has Two Mommies, it's the first of the book of its kind, as far as we know. Came out in 1989, and you know, you say that's when big gay couples started having kids. Well, not really. I mean, to some degree, we've always raised kids.
Absolutely.
It wasn't something that was brand new. But what I think is amazing about the book, it was before we were really seriously thinking about legal marriage equality.
Right.
True.
That's true.
That didn't come until the 90s. Another story I want to go to, because we're going to run out of time. But
I was just going to make the comment, you know, the term Boston marriage has just completely changed its meaning,
well,
I think.
It has.
That's true.
You wrote a story that's the name of your anthology, A Letter to Harvey Milk.
Ah. Yeah, A Letter to Harvey Milk is the title story of a collection of 9 short stories of mine, and each story focuses on a different Jewish lesbian. That particular story, A Letter to Harvey Milk, has really taken on a life of its own. It's been in many anthologies. It was made into a one-person play. It was made into a short film. And its newest incarnation is it has been made into a musical with 18 original songs.
Oh, wow.
And it was performed this past summer as part of the New York Musical Festival, and it won the most promising show of the festival.
Oh, it's just going to go on from there to maybe tour, or?
I hope something happens with it. You know, I'm not in charge, which, you know, uh-huh. I mean, I can't believe I'm saying those words because I like to be in charge of everything. Uh-huh. But, you know, there were 2 very talented women who optioned the story, and they wrote the lyrics and the music, and then they hired somebody else to write the book. And so, you know, they are the owners of the entity that is the show. And hopefully they will continue to pursue and give it some life.
Tell us what the story is, just real briefly.
A Letter to Harvey Milk is actually the diary of Harry Weinberg, who's a 77-year-old Jewish widower who takes a creative writing class, and he doesn't know that his teacher is a lesbian, but he does find that out, and she doesn't know that he was a personal friend of Harvey Milk's. Mm. So she finds that out, and then they bond, and then several more things happen, which I won't tell you about because I don't want you to ruin the story.
Yeah. Your book, you don't do a whole lot of daddy books, but you did one, Daddy Papa Me.
Yeah, I also have a book called Daddy Song,
which is
about, you know, there's a dad, but there's no mom, and there's no other dad. So, you know, there really could be, it could be about a single dad, a dad with a wife in the other room, a dad with a husband in the other room, but it's a lullaby from a dad to his daughter.
Oh,
wonderful.
So wonderful. That, I got to get that one, too.
Yeah, you do. You have a whole library of books have to fill in with here.
I'm headed to Amazon.
Yeah, and so that's one of the things that I find so amazing about the criticism of you is that there have been, you know, these crazy people, like the one who wanted to take your book out of the New York curriculum.
Because
how
can curriculum.
How can we teach all about sex going on? And it's like, have you opened one of these books?
I was
books?
About to say.
It's like
right.
They're going on a picnic.
Right. You know, there's probably more sex in Dick and Jane than
probably.
In any of these books.
Probably is.
Yeah. You have done some adult books, though. One book that you wrote is called Bedroom Eyes, Stories of Lesbians in the Boudoir.
That was a book I edited, so it's an anthology. I think there's maybe 20, 25 writers who all contributed a short story. But I have a novel for adults called The Reluctant Daughter, mm-hmm. which is about a fraught mother-daughter relationship. I had the short story collection, A Letter to Harvey Milk. I had a novel called In Every Laugh a Tear, other short story collections, Every Woman's Dream, Girls Will Be Girls. So I actually started off more as a writer for adults and became more known as a writer for kids. I have a couple of poetry collections, Nobody's Mother, Still Life with Buddy.
Your novel, Jailbait, it's about...
Jailbait.
That's about bullying, and you wrote that actually before bullying became the national thing to... That people could relate to.
It's about a teenage girl who thinks she's in love with a much older man who is really abusing her. But, the story is told through her point of view, and she is an unreliable narrator to what's going on in her own life. And then there's also a high school boy in her class who does bully her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she does get back at him, I must say.
Ah.
Wow.
interesting... real variety of things that you've written. What are some things that you haven't written yet that you'd like to?
Well, right now I'm writing a book of poems about my mom's death, recent death, and all the poems are in form. So that's my current project. In terms of what I haven't written but I want to write, no one's ever asked me that. That's a really interesting question. I would have to really think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'll never write a cookbook. That I can guarantee you.
Well, and if you did, I'd never use it.
You know, with kids growing up today who've been brought up in homes, like Zach Walls, the wonderful Zach Walls, was raised by two mommies in Iowa and has been such a great advocate and voice for our community. Do you think you'll ever write a book? Maybe Heather has two kids?
I don't know, to talk about that.
You know, that this today's generation who read this book as
a child would
then talk to their children about LGBT people.
Well, you know, I have been asked to write a book about a kid who has two grandmothers, which I have to point out, the kid would have to have three or four grandmothers, right? Because, you know, I have two grandmothers, so they weren't married to each other. So it's a math problem.
Right, I am too, yeah.
Right.
It's a math problem.
So there's that. You know, I would like to write a book about a kid who has two lesbian aunts who are married, you know, because I have a nephew.
Cool.
So, you know, I'm thinking about that. But, you know, I don't usually get ideas by thinking about them. They usually come from, you know, out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they're gifts, so I kind of wait for them to happen.
Oh, okay.
Well, they're all awesome. Just really fantastic.
You.
It's a delight to have you on the show today.
Yeah, it really is. I'm looking forward. You're coming to the conference in Winnipeg.
I am. I can't wait.
I am looking forward to it.
I can't wait
to
hear about it when you come back.
Yeah. Well, okay, so here's my question for people who don't know what this conference is, because they'd have no reason to. What is the name of the GLBT Jews? It used to be called the World Congress of Gay and Lesbian Jewish Organizations.
Right. Now I think it's called Nir Harim. I'm not sure what that means.
Yeah, I have no idea what that means.
I have no idea what that means. So we should be good little Jews and find out.
Okay, so why Winnipeg? How many gay Jews are there in Winnipeg?
I don't know, but we're going on like some fabulous city tour that I think ends in a boat ride, so that's what I'm excited
about. I'm looking forward. I've never been to Winnipeg. I've seen pictures. It's a gorgeous city.
Nobody else has either.
Nobody else has either.
I guess every year, every 2 years, however, whenever this conference happens, they go somewhere else. Why they picked Winnipeg, I have no idea.
Because we hosted it back in 1997, and it's every 2 years. We had about 400 or 500 people here, something like that.
So
Estelle Getty came. It was a lot of fun. But
I think it was in Israel 1 year, which makes sense.
I did go to it when it was in Israel 1 year. It was the first year of Gay Pride in Israel, the wildest Gay Pride I've ever been to.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And that was just the first year of it. So I'm looking forward. We'll see each other there. I want to thank you again. Is there a book that we didn't mention? Oh, I know one book I wanted to mention. And this goes right off. One of your new books, Here's the World, A Year of Jewish Holidays.
Right. Here's the World is a book in rhyming couplets that just kind of gives a little snippet of each Jewish holiday. And then in the back of the book, there will be a longer explanation of the holiday and then a recipe or craft for each holiday.
So you have written a cookbook.
You have written a cookbook.
I guess there you have it. Oh, my God. I didn't even think of that.
I didn't even think.
I can cross that one off the list. But I would love to mention, because you have been so fabulous, my book, The Boy Who Cried Fabulous.
Ah.
Another one. I am going to Amazon as soon as I get home.
Me too.
He has a whole list of books.
Yeah.
The Boy Who Cried Fabulous is about a little boy named Roger who thinks everything is fabulous, and he gets distracted by all the fabulousness of the world, so he's always late. So his parents ban the word fabulous.
So he's related to Patty.
He's always late. Patty needs to get that book, too.
I'm going to be spending money on Amazon today.
So then, of course, instead of everything being fabulous, things are, you know, splendiferous and, you know, magnificent and all that. But by the end of the book, Roger's parents realize that he is the world's most fabulous son.
Oh,
Leslie
wow.
Newman. She's the author of Heather Has Two Mommies. If you have never read that book, I don't care what age, get it. Go to your library. All of our libraries have it. Go to the library. Get it. If you haven't read October Morning and you're in the mood to cry, I love your new book. And 60 other books in between. Leslie Newman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on the
show.
Thank
you.
If you're here in Dallas, come into the studio with us sometime.
I would absolutely love to.
See you in Winnipeg. And for all of us here at Lambda Weekly, we'll be back next week with more.
KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people. Business owners, tell KNON's listeners about your business. You can put your business or event on KNON. KNON currently has space available to run announcements for you. Tell KNON's listeners about your goods, services, nightclub, concert, or event. Help keep the voice of the people on the air while putting your information on the air. KNON's been named the number one radio station in Dallas by both the Dallas Observer and D Magazine. Put your business with Dallas's number one station. Call now for more information at 214-828-9500, extension 227, or extension 233. For more information, go to KNON.org and click on the Run Spots on KNON page. It's a great way for your business to support community radio while letting more people know about you.